Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. Good to be with you as always. And like always, we have a phenomenal topic and a great guest today. The topic is ESG as it relates to commercial and corporate real estate and the built environment. There is a tremendous amount of energy around ESG as it relates to investing. Fortune 250 companies embracing, major investment organizations engaging. And even though there is all this energy, there seems to still be a little bit of confusion in the built environment as to how it relates. Now, the easy issues of energy conservation, those are easy to pick off. But what else is underneath this whole ESG movement? So what we're going to do today is we're going to have a great guest that we're going to talk about ESG at a high level to begin with. And then later in the conversation, we're going to drill in. So everybody who's involved in the built environment understands Monday morning actions as it relates to ESG. So with that, I'd like to bring in Chris Caton, partner and senior director of strategic growth at Code Green. Chris, how are you?
Good morning. I'm great. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, we scanned the globe looking for an expert, and we found you. And we specifically wanted to get somebody in the consulting arena because to get just one person's opinion from an organization that's dealing with ESG, we wanted a much broader approach to this conversation. And because you deal with so many large commercial and corporate owners and operators, we felt that your vantage point would be wide and deep, which would give the viewers in our short time together a good understanding of what ESG means to the built environment. So before we get started, I always like to give the audience some context on our guests. So can you give us a little breakdown on your past and how you got to this point of focusing on ESG in the built environment?
Sure. Well, thank you again. Really, really excited to be here. I really like your love this platform and excited to have this conversation today. So yeah, my background is actually started out in architecture. I studied architecture and I worked as an architect for about 10 years. Before moving into real estate development, both in the US and in Hong Kong. And then about 12 years ago, joined Code Green in an early stage, became a partner in the firm and have now been helping the firm grow to what we are today, which is about 60 plus staff, working with about 650 million square feet of commercial property across North America, realistically, to provide energy, sustainability, and ESG services to help these folks deal with both asset level challenges and also investor pressure around ESG.
Right. Well, and I think we came to the conclusion yesterday, we had a little bit of common ground in that when we did our building tours over to Hong Kong and we stood on top of IFC2, which was a phenomenal building. I understand your office was in that building.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting to see how the sustainability movement is picking up pace in different countries at different rates. I think some of the new developments in Asia are really embracing sustainability, energy efficiency, and renewable electricity very quickly. And we have a lot more existing building stock in North America that we're working to retrofit. So we have really a two-pronged approach here in the US where other countries have a lot of new construction that they can tackle these problems with. Whereas here in the US, we have a really large retrofit market. That's primarily where we focus is with existing buildings and core assets.
Very cool. So I've been around long enough to have been through the E part of this, I think two or three times, the environmental. In fact, one of the pillars why we started RealCom was, sitting in Manhattan late one night after a dinner out, looking up at the buildings with all the lights on, knowing that there were three people in that building, the cleaning crew. And I said, you know, one of the fundamental goals of RealCom 23 years ago was to try to convince building owners to turn off the lights, you know, when they weren't using them, right? So the E part of ESG, you know, energy being a subset of environmental, we've been on for a long time. And again, probably this is the third iteration. So I probably have a little skepticism as far as how really, truly we are going to embrace this. I've been trying my entire career to get people to embrace it. So when I see folks like you coming alongside, I say thank you. The S part, the social, that's fairly new. I think it's always been part of our culture, but in the last few years, it's really risen to the top as far as people's awareness and there's some subsets of social. And remember, we're always going to look at the technology angle here at RealCom and the innovation angle. So when we talk about the S, we'll try to do it with a technology angle. And then three, governance. This one, frankly, I'm a little confused on because governance.
Looks like we lost Jim there. So kind of picking up where Jim left off,
I'm back.
There he is.
And actually, we warned Chris about this one, saying if a chance, there's a 2% chance, so we hit the 2% today, that Howard would come in for me. So I have no idea what happened.
Goodbye now.
All right, thank you, Howard. So the governance part of the conversation, frankly, I'm a little confused about because governance has always been a part of society, whether it's business or institutional government. So when we get to the governance part, as it relates to buildings, I'm going to be curious to hear about your conversations. So let's start about the environmental. Where do you focus at a high level?
Right. I think what's really interesting in the past few years, as I mentioned, when we were discussing earlier, the world of sustainable buildings has really evolved over the past 15 years. Just to give a quick kind of how we've gotten to where we are today, that 15 years ago, if a building wanted to be a green building, if a real estate developer wanted to have a green portfolio, they pursued LEED certification. It was kind of a one-stop shop. If you had LEED, that was great. You were kind of done with sustainability. Over the past 12 years, 15 years, the idea of a sustainable real estate portfolio has really evolved to include many other factors, including healthy buildings, resilient buildings, and even in the last few years, more community-oriented and socially focused buildings. So, and then I'd say, really, since the recent focus on climate change and the recent focus on climate risks that are out there for real assets, this focus on reducing the carbon footprint of properties, both existing buildings and new buildings, has really exploded, I would say, even in the past 12 months, especially since with the new administration, that this push, I think the E, just to go back to your question, the E used to be focused on energy reductions primarily for cost savings purposes. Let's save a dollar, let's turn off a light, let's improve our paybacks at the building, improve the net operating income of a commercial real estate. Over the past 6 months, it's really changed its tune to be let's reduce the carbon footprint of these buildings, which for those in the weeds, it's a slightly different process. If you are reducing all energy use to save money, that can be turning off the lights, changing your boiler, doing all of those things. If you're looking to reduce your carbon footprint, the buildings actually have to get a lot smarter, which is great for our conversation today. I think a lot of this push to what we call decarbonize the real estate industry is a push to move away from fossil fuels, move on to smarter energy consuming HVAC systems that are at this point really looking towards what we call electrification. Because the goal with the E now, as opposed to just saving energy, to save carbon, is actually about moving buildings onto electricity-based systems, not just for lighting and cooling, but also in certain regions, heating, because the grid in these areas is moving towards a more renewable grid. So I think the once you're using electricity for all of these systems, it allows a smart building to really take advantage of when is someone in the building, what do they need for lighting, cooling, heating, plug loads, turn the building on in the spaces where the building needs those occupants, has those occupants, and turn it off when all of those people are not there. And once your building is fully electric, all of those systems are much more responsive. If anyone's ever had an electric heater, that can turn on in a few minutes versus going to the basement and turning on your boiler. So that ability for an electric building to respond to the occupants is much higher. So I think the uptick in smart building technologies is going to, like I said, see a big explosion as buildings are looking to service their occupants more in real time.
So 2 points, add a little color to what you said. On the LEED Platinum, we always joke in the RealCom and more specifically the IBCon community that we go for the titanium ranking. Because we believe you can take a network, throw it on top of a building, attach all the devices and squeeze inefficiencies, which ultimately result in carbon reduction at a rate never before seen. I mean, when the building is truly intelligent, responsive, you can just, squeeze the inefficiencies out. But the second point you made, I want to touch on this for a second on the E conversation of ESG. Asia, you said the Asians and other parts around the world are a little bit more into this. 2004, we were over in Tokyo at the Panasonic headquarters, and the chairman, or it was a very senior level executive, literally took us up to the 20th floor, and he showed us, this is, you know, over 15 years ago. As he walked into the office, the lights came on, and as he walked away, the lights went off. We called it parting of the sea, right? I mean, and so we've been aware for a very long time, these technologies are readily available, okay? Whether it's for carbon reduction or energy savings or cost optimization, I mean, this is the battle we've been fighting. From your perspective, why is there so much resistance to making a few changes to a building architecture to, number one, make more money, save more money, be green, be sustainable? What is the resistance, in your opinion?
I think, like I mentioned a little bit, is it's really a different question for existing buildings versus new construction. I think a lot of new buildings are implementing those types of solutions, very smart buildings, sensors that turn on lights, ventilation plugs when they need to. We have, as I mentioned, we have so many existing buildings, you know, in the commercial universe in the US, and it's inertia, right? It's inertia, just like anything, that it's a hard habit to crack. People often say when we tell a building, you should look into these systems that will turn the lights out. They say the CEO, they're going to walk into the building. They want to see the lights on. They want their office to be 60 degrees freezing before they get there. And because that's the way they had it. That's the way that their predecessor had it. So I think there's, and it's a very different approach in the US than it is in Europe. Europeans can say, oh, I can handle slightly warmer in the summer. I can handle slightly cooler in the winter. That's not the case for a lot of Americans. We're used to, everything in the US is just supersized, and people have gotten used to these things.
Right. Very good point. Yeah. The lessons we've learned in the last 18 months with this global work, shop, play, exercise from home experiment as a result of COVID, I've been saying and believe very strongly that the energy that a building uses to perform a function, you just don't look at the time that person's in that building. You have to look at the entire supply chain, if you will, from the time that person leaves their house, the 2-hour commute, and I think that if we really want to look at the built environment, you have to look at the whole process from the time that an employee or person leaves their home and goes to that building as part of the accounting for the sustainability impact. Right. And so that might mean the corporate headquarters in New York needs to be separated into 4 satellite campuses across the United States or around the region of New York. So we're cutting commute time. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, it's definitely an interesting question. We help a lot of organizations calculate their carbon footprint every year. And this year we did raise the question, none bit off on it, which is, okay, if most of your workforce was working from home, are you going to collect utility bills from your staff? Because maybe you reduced energy in the office, but their energy at home went up. You've got people at home with the heat on, maybe throughout the day when it used to turn off, or the air conditioning or lighting at home. So there's definitely an aspect to, incorporating your full carbon footprint when you evaluate this. I would say setting the boundary for who's responsible for that does become a bit difficult, trying to figure out, is it the organization's responsibility? Is it the occupant? Is it the building owner's responsibility? I think one thing, as we see, with the US, rejoining the Paris Agreement and everybody looking to reduce their carbon, whether or not you're a building owner or you're a transportation company or a contractor, is divvying up that accountability for where you're going to focus. And I will just add one thing where I thought you were going with this, which is during the past, 14 months, when many folks were working from home, the energy use in buildings across, I'd say, New York City, where a lot of our building clients are, the occupancy went down by 80 or 90%, down to maybe 10% or lower tenant occupancy. The energy reduction, so that's a 90% reduction in occupancy, energy use went down 10 or 15%. So
makes no sense.
But it was a huge eye-opening experience, because a lot of landlords will say, oh, we do everything for the occupants. Everything is driven by the occupants. The reality is that a lot of those occupied spaces are not smart enough to know when those people are there. So there's a huge opportunity.
And this is truly a paradigm shift in that for the last 50 to 75 years, we've learned that you live someplace, you get in a car, you go to work, you get in a car, you go to shop, you get in a car, you go to play, right? That all involves carbon and you know, gasoline and oil and all this energy consumption. And then we learned during the pandemic that maybe we can work at home a little bit and maybe we can shop at home a little bit, right? So I would like to see a systemic approach to this built environment where you say, okay, you know, let's look at the 5-day work week and figure out when our employees need to be in the office and when it's okay for them to do their private work, you know, at home, not getting in a car every day. And that's part of the conversations we're going to try to drive, you know, is to really force that systemic approach. We're going to take a brief break and come back, and then we're going to go a little bit into S&G and then talk about some of the technology options that people can think about, you know, trying to get this ESG program in place for the built environment. So we'll be right back and looking forward to the conversation. All right, and thank you to Brainbox AI for that. So let's bring Chris back and continue our conversation on ESG for the built environment. All right, Chris, so we spent a little bit of time on E. Let's talk about social, okay? Define at a general level, not the built environment yet, in a general ESG conversation, explain to the audience what the S stands for.
Sure. So the S stands for social and across ESG, where it represents essentially the organization, if we're taking a step back from real estate, the organization's impact on the really the human side of their organization. So that includes both their internal stakeholders, like their staff, and their both their senior leadership all the way through their staff, all the way, you know, to the lowest levels of operational staff, and their communities. So how does that organization both provide for, rely on, and impact those communities, both internal and external stakeholders? So that could be everything. Yes, go ahead.
So that's general. Now let's go, not talking about technology just yet. So now going into the built environment, a landlord, a building owner, an operator, service provider, tenant, how does S impact them as it relates to the building?
Right. So the S in social for real estate, again, takes those, it's just a more focused approach to those two, as I mentioned, both internal and external stakeholders. So on the internal side, it's again, what are you doing as an organization for your own employees? Do you have, you know, are you treating them with respect? Do you have a diverse workforce internally? Those are some of the aspects of the internal aspect, sections of the social impacts. And then on the external, really all of your stakeholders on that are your customers, which primarily are typically your tenants in a commercial real estate organization, how are you impacting those? So if you're developing a building, how is your building going to impact the local community? Are you providing, say, access into your public areas for the community on weekends when you're not using it? Are you providing local jobs? Are you creating local community centers, you know, during that process? So there's definitely on the community side, and then on the again, with diversity, there's again this idea, this tenet of, are you providing a service or an amenity or a property to diverse cross section of the community, depending on where you're working.
So where does technology come in, or innovation? I mean, what can, you know, trying to accomplish those goals, those very specific goals, how could a building owner operator who's really serious about ESG, you know, what could they do from an innovation standpoint to accomplish those goals?
So one thing I think, which is kind of, which is a great opportunity for technology in real estate with relation to the S, is actually to really get to know your customer, really get to know your stakeholder. And there's some great tools out there. I'll start even just with, say, commercial real estate. They're great tools, fun startups working to create handheld apps for a landlord to actually engage with their tenants, and not just that tenant rep, like one person per tenant, but actually right, the occupants of that building. So that's a great way for building owners to essentially start to get to know those tenants, understand what is their background, what are their interests, what are their needs, what are their priorities, so that you as a building can actually tailor your amenities, tailor your programming, even tailor the way you operate the building to better address those. So
What I think would be helpful, you know, and we could work with your organization and others, is to develop literally a hit list. I mean, you know, the commercial corporate real estate build environment is pretty busy. They got lots of things going on, a lot of objectives. Number one, trying to get tenants back into buildings. But if we could come up with lists for the each of the E, the S, and the G to say, these are 5, 7, 10 very specific things you could do in the building, like you just mentioned, you mentioned one or two of them, but really try to expand that list to 5, 7, or 10. Because if they have that list, and this is new to a lot of people, I think they'll react and move quicker. I think that would be a worthwhile. We're doing the same thing on the cyber front, because that cyber has become an issue in the built environment. And it's a big, big issue, right? And you could debate it and talk about it for years without coming up with that list. So what we're working on right now is, these are the 10 specific things you need to worry about in your building as it relates to a cyber attack. And I think it would be very helpful on each of these, the E, the S, and the G, to do the same.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. Be happy to work with you on that. I would say, in addition, also, when you're looking at the E, the S, and the G, and even looking back at, say, the 14 months during this pandemic, the approach to creating a healthy, safe work environment really falls under this S. So a lot of folks have really been, as they're explaining what their social engagements have been, initiatives have been, all of the reviewing air filtration, reviewing healthy cleaning practices in buildings, that really does fall under the S, because it really is the well-being of your building occupants. So a lot of that, that would really be filed under the S. You know, when you're looking at making a healthier building, it's not because you're trying to save energy, it's not because you're trying to save emissions, you're really trying to make a responsible property for a building occupant.
I've been fighting for operable windows and skyscrapers for my entire career, because right. I always realized there's a little benefit to some fresh air once in a while. So hopefully under the E and the S, maybe we can accomplish that. We only have a minute or two left, so I want to go real quick on governance. My opinion on governance is it's been in place forever. I'm still trying to reconcile how technology can impact governance, a new level of governance inside the built environment. Any final thoughts on that?
A bit of a stretch, I would say, that I agree governance has been around forever. I would say the governance of your sustainability program and the governance and accountability of how you operate these buildings, there's a huge tech play there, which is creating accountability. The smarter your building is, the more accessible all of your data, all of your operational tactics are. That's a better, stronger, more resilient governance program, where you used to have a chief engineer that walked in, sniffed the air, and said, "Oh, I'm gonna turn the building on at 6. There's no governance there. You don't know if that was the right move, wasn't the right move. If you have systems in place and technology in place that says, these are all the tea leaves that you read, these are all the inputs you had, this is the decision you made. That type of governance is really, I would call it, more around accountability.
Well, again, and hearing you say it that way, that's been our mantra for over 20 years. Technology laid on top of a building can get to a level of granularity never seen before. And yes, with that efficiency comes a tighter governance model where you can regulate yourself, you can review yourself. So I'm 110% on board with that one. But again, I think it needs to be explored a little bit more and outlined. So again, I want to work with you and your organization and others in the future to try to really make it easy for the industry to understand what can I do as it relates to ESG, as it relates to the built environment and specifically technology and innovation.
Yeah. No, that's great. Be happy to help you.
Awesome. Well, you have been wonderful. We're a minute over, but a well worth the conversation. And we hope to have you back and have you part of our community and help figure out these new challenges.
No, that's great. Really glad to be here. Great conversation, and look forward to working more together.
Awesome. You have a great day. Be well.
You too.
All right. With that, let's bring on our favorite newscaster of the week, Howard Berger. I don't know if it's fair to call you a newscaster, but you do such a good job with it. Not just presenting it, but digging for it. I know we got a good system in place, but there's a lot of junk out there, I have to say. And finding relevant articles that can help people is tougher. So, Howard, I'm going to turn it over to you and tell us what's going on in the news this week with real estate technology.
Well, thanks, Jim. And Chris, thanks. It was a great conversation. I'm back every week. We highlight a few of the stories from our weekly news briefing. We go through hundreds of stories and try to pick the top stories that are relevant. We release that every Thursday about 11 a.m. Pacific. So our top story this week is from actually one of our favorite people who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, Hans Neubert, digital experience design leader for Gensler. And in it, Hans describes that over the past year, we've learned that designing buildings is a whole lot more than just creating aesthetically pleasing space where people can move around and get work done. It's also about creating the digital experiences that really help solve some complex human challenges. I mean, for example, it's made us dependent on things like remote work and virtual collaboration, contact delivery, curbside pickup, telehealth visits, mobile payments, and that's just a starter. So this is just a teaser for the article. I'm not going to spoil the plot, but this is a great article and I encourage you to read it. Discover what it means for how we're going to need to design buildings in the future. Next, I want to shout out to this week's tech partner, Locati, who provides a workplace analytics solution for corporate real estate occupiers. And we're in the middle of the biggest remote working experiment in modern history. And we know there was no expectation of perfection when we started. Businesses had no option aside from trial and error on a big scale. But we've gained a hugely better understanding of what remote work is and the power and the limitations of collaborative tech. The old metrics, density, cost per square foot, don't work anymore. And now we're looking at how humans interacted with the space, how work's done, and how it attract and what attracts new employees to the office. So new and existing employees. This is a quick read on how corporate real estate managers need technologies and data tools to help guide and support a lot of these new decisions about space and utilization they're going to need to make going forward. Personally, I was saddened to hear that one of PropTech's darlings, Katerra, another SoftBank bank startup, is shutting down operations. Now, founded in 2015, Katerra promised to really transform the $12 trillion construction industry by integrating technology throughout building design, construction process, everything from modular manufacture, building structures and systems to general contracting. They had received more than $1 billion in funding from SoftBank and at one point valued at $4 billion. Sources reported that the company's out of money, cutting thousands of jobs, may end up walking away from the existing construction jobs. Company exec cited the pandemic along with soaring labor and construction costs as reasons for its latest financial difficulties. And then finally, real quickly, there's a new CIO at Newmark Group, Sridhar Potaneri, who's just named Chief Information Officer, has a mandate to streamline and digitize more operations, develop new products and services. He's tasked now with ushering a much more data-driven set of strategies and tools that's going to help Newmark differentiate themselves and hopefully create unique value in the market. So good luck, Sridhar. Unfortunately, I'm out of time. That's it for me today, but there's much more in our weekly briefing. So check it out and I will see you all next week.
And I know we're out of time, but I want to make a quick point. You've mentioned telemedicine in your news, connecting that back to the conversation with Chris. Under the S of ESG, we talked about how a building owner could actually install a telemedicine facility inside the building.
We're seeing some of that
using technology. Yeah. So that's a way technology can impact the S part of ESG in the built environment. So thanks for the great news, Howard. I know we got to run out of time, but great job as always. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah. I don't know what the internet gods are not being nice today. That's twice in one episode, but we're back. So thank you for filling in. And before we final and talk about next week's episode, let's hear from our final sponsor and I'll be right back. All right. First of all, I just want to thank everybody for a great show, specifically Chris, bringing great insight into ESG. We're going to have many, many more conversations on that, given the momentum we're seeing in the market. And of course, Howard and Nansen team for production. So next week, I am really super duper excited about next week for a number of reasons. Number one, it's GSA PBS, the real estate arm of the federal government. We have been friends with these guys for 15 years. Everybody thinks of governments as big bureaucracies. They are not. They have been stealth. They have been leaders. They've been pushing things very fast. And we've got two great people, Chip Pierpoint, Director of Facilities Operations and Technology, and Anna Ross in GSA Office of Facility Management, Innovation, Technology, and Performance. We have got two phenomenal people who are going to be telling us how the federal government is making their real estate portfolio smart. And is pushing the envelope on next generation building. So make sure you see next week's episode and we're looking forward to it. So you all have a great day, great weekend, and we will see you next Friday. Be well.